Ethical evidence. This is my least favorite lecture in debate camp because I wish we didn't have to do it. But we have to. And my first slide explains why we have to. Because unethical evidence is a huge problem in homeschool debate. I did some work a couple years ago working with nationally qualified debaters, helping them get ready for the national tournament. They were sending cases to me to review. And I estimate that about 25% of the kids who qualified the nationals were using fraudulent evidence. I wish that were an exaggeration. I wish that, you know, I could tell you it's just a few kids, you know, bad apples, whatever. But it's not. It's actually a huge, widespread problem. You have probably, if you have been debating for 3 years, you have probably debated against someone who is using fraudulent evidence. I'd be surprised if you hadn't. So, what I want to do is two things. I want to educate you so that at least you understand what fraudulent evidence is so that you're motivated never, ever to even think about using it. And also to help you recognize when someone else is doing it. So that we can hopefully catch some of that, not as a police force or, you know, looking to try to get people in trouble, but really to try to just raise the standards of homeschool debate. Winning at every cost is absolutely wrong. There are things you should not and must not do for the sake of winning a debate round. It's much better to lose than it is to win using unethical means. Whatever you do, do the right thing. I will tell you this as well, that unethical and fraudulent evidence has impacted outrounds at national tournaments on more than one occasion. I know that is absolutely true. That's not just a rumor. That is a fact. That has happened. I'm talking about outrounds at nationals in, not just in NCFCA, but also in STOA have been affected and results have been changed because fraudulent evidence was discovered. So this is not hypothetical. It's not just me being overreactive. This kind of stuff is going on. So how do we deal with it? What creates unethical evidence? I think the first one is an unhealthy overemphasis on winning. People want to win at any cost. And accompanying that is laziness. It's much easier to write your own evidence card than it is to spend an hour online trying to research a published source who said what you need them to say. And people get pressured. Maybe a big tournament's coming up. Maybe nationals are coming up. And they want that edge. They want to win. And they don't want to do the research to write a case that can actually win. They just want to win. And so they're tempted. I say, well, you know, maybe here's an article written by somebody that doesn't say exactly what I want it to say, so I'll just change a few words. I'll just summarize it and then put my summary in as what Dr. Expert said. I'll just add a few extra words to what he said and make it sound like that's what he really said. I'll just change the date a little bit so it's more updated than the other team's evidence. I'll just change this, I'll just change that. And before you know it, they've compromised their ethics so far that they don't really care anymore what's right and wrong. Because they don't want to take the time to do the good research. They just want to get something that'll work and something that'll win. You just can't do that. Sometimes it's novice debaters who don't know any better. And sometimes what happens is people pick up the trade evidence and they don't realize that the evidence they've traded for came from someone else who had this kind of mindset. So it may be completely unknown to them that they're using a piece of evidence that was fraudulent. And so they may personally be completely innocent. But nevertheless, they're the ones who suffer for it if they get caught in a debate round using it. All I can say is you need to have a mindset that ethical evidence is very important and that you're going to do everything above board and completely ethical. What creates unethical evidence? We're not talking about honest mistakes and typographical errors. I understand completely. A word drops out occasionally. We have a typo somewhere where it says 100 and it's really 105 or something. A number gets changed just by mistake. That happens, okay? I'm not out here to try to get people punished because one letter or one word dropped out of a card. We've had one word drop out of a card in Blue Book before. It happens. It's an accident. And I'm not out to blast anybody about random typos, that kind of thing. Okay, that's not what this is about. What this is about is when I see a debate case where seven cards and all seven of them have major changes from the way they were written, and all seven of those changes all just happen to help the affirmative team that published the case or that was running the case. Okay, that's not a random typo. When you have seven mistakes and they all help you, that's not random. That is tampering. And it's obvious that somebody's doing something in order to improve their chances of winning. Okay, so recognize the difference between accidental one-time mistakes and large-scale tampering and fraud. What are the costs of shady evidence? I've kind of already talked about that. First of all, your reputation will be trashed, rightfully so in most cases, unless you just didn't know, but you still lose your reputation. You will destroy relationships. Remember, people that you're cheating on when you use fraudulent evidence, those are your friends and your fellow competitors in the same debate league that you're in. And it goes back to the old principle of treating others the way you would like to be treated. You wouldn't want somebody else using that against you. Therefore, don't treat people that way yourself. There could be penalties. You could lose that debate round, or you could be disqualified and kicked out of the whole tournament. You could even be kicked out of the debate league and never be debating again for that kind of a thing. So it really is a serious matter. Okay, here are the most common evidence problems that that Mr. Baker and I have seen. Baker is one of our coaches and helped write this. The first ethical issue that we find sometimes is ellipses. That's those three dots. Those are called ellipses. Blue Book has a policy of never, ever, ever adding ellipses into a published quote that we use. We never add them. Well, here's the thing. There's no rule in NCFCA that says you can't put ellipses in a quote. What I'm saying is that you need to be very careful, and I recommend against it when you're writing cards. If you see a card that someone is using and has ellipses in it, the first thing I do is go look up the quote, because I want to see what they took out. The purpose of ellipses is to drop out words that are filler that you don't want to cite. Now, the abuse of ellipses is when you use them to drop out, like, the word not. Like, it's very clear that diethyl will cause cancer. Or it's very clear that diethyl will ... cause cancer. Okay, but guess what? I took out the word not. Okay, so I just reverse the meaning. Or, you know, I take out, it's very clear that diethyl, in the opinion of many experts, could be a factor, but probably isn't in the risk of cancer. And then I put ... So it's clear that diethyl is ... a risk of cancer. So I just took out all the qualifications and all the maybes and all the probably not by using those ellipses to cover up all that stuff that I didn't want the judge to know about. You get caught doing that, you can be in some ethical trouble. Okay. How to use brackets properly. I've seen brackets used in all kinds of crazy ways in debate cards. Sometimes people use brackets to introduce their own theories into Dr. Expert's quote. So they put their own words in that they want to be in there, and they think they're being ethical by putting it in brackets. But the judge cannot hear that. The judge doesn't hear the brackets, because you're not saying bracket, blah, 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 unbracket. Okay? So the judge doesn't know. You're slipping stuff in there, and the judge just hears an entire quote. Now, sometimes when I'm reading a card, if it's not immediately obvious that we're using brackets, sometimes I'll try to change the inflection of my voice. So, for example, if I were reading this card, I would say, Dr. Joe Expert, NPI, a judge, that's the National Policy Institute, said we need $5 billion. And notice how I stepped out, I kind of stepped out of the card and explained to the judge what NPI is, and then I stepped back into the card. That's one way to be really super ethical about explaining that you're using brackets. Because what I've seen students do is, imagine this, Dr. Joe Expert, NPI, National Policy Institute, which endorses our plan and says we ought to do it immediately because it'll save the world, said we need $5 billion. Okay, is that a fair use of brackets? Absolutely not. I just threw in my own opinions into the brackets to make it sound like this card is endorsing my plan. Okay, what's the correct way to use brackets? The correct way is to fill in an acronym, for example, NPI. Because if I just say, Judge, Dr. Joe Expert, NPI, said we need $5 billion. Okay, well, what's NPI? National Policy Institute. Okay, fine. That's ethical. And again, I disclosed it. I put brackets there, and I put in the citation, I'll put brackets added to show that I, the debater, added those brackets into the text. Another ethical way to use brackets is to fill in pronouns. For example, he, Matt Baker, said we need $5 billion. Okay, well, who's he? Well, it's the person that was identified in the previous paragraph. And I know that's him because we're just filling in the context from the existing paragraph. Sometimes we have a partial name. So, for example, according to Baker, the UN budget will double next year. Well, who's Baker? Oh, okay. According to UN Secretary General Matt Baker, the UN budget will double next year. So filling in names, filling in acronyms, that's an ethical use of brackets. Using brackets to fill in extra advocacy or changing words that you want the word to be something different, so you change the words? No. I've seen students do that too, where they take out the word he used to put in a different word and put it in brackets. Can't do that. Questions about brackets? Carl? That's a good question. I'm going to throw you candy just for asking. It should be on the slide. Parentheses have a different meaning in published English documents. Parentheses have a meaning. Listen carefully. You ask me the question, you want to hear the answer. Parentheses are a natural part of the text that indicate that the text has something parenthetical that the author is describing. Brackets have a specific meaning in English grammar and English published writing. So when brackets are used, that means something has been added. When parentheses are used, it means the original author put something in parentheses. So there is a very important ethical and grammatical difference between a parentheses and a bracket. Okay, distorting primary intent. Let's imagine you have an affirmative evidence that says we need cap and trade. Cap and trade is going to solve for climate change, going to solve for pollution, going to save a million lives next year. And the title of the article is Cap and Trade Fails. Do you think there could be a problem with the way that evidence is being used? Might be. Might want to go look that up. Might want to write down the URL. And after the debate round, go look it up at home and see what they're citing. Maybe that quote is being taken out of context or misused. Maybe it's completely fabricated. Who knows? Maybe what Dr. Expert is doing is citing what some people believe, and then the next sentence he says, but that's totally wrong, and here's why cap and trade fails. So they're citing Dr. Expert, who says cap and trade will save lives, when in fact, that's Dr. Expert explaining what some people believe, but it's totally wrong. Okay, it may be an accurate quote, but misused in an unethical fashion. Sometimes you'll see a quote that begins, some people believe that cap and trade would save millions of lives. And the affirmative debater will quote that for their cap and trade plan or whatever. You can, whatever plan you want to fill in. I'm just using that as an example. Okay, that's a classic tip-off. When a sentence begins, some people believe. That means the author doesn't necessarily share that belief. He's citing what other people believe. And maybe he's just about to refute it in the next sentence. And guess what? They're not going to read that sentence. So they're giving you a false impression about what this expert is saying in his article. Now, here's another thing that we often do in Blue Book, right here. Disclose the author's intent. Disclose the author's position. Sometimes in some cards in Blue Book, there'll be a card that's really useful, but it comes from an author who supports the opposing position. But nevertheless, he will admit, oh yeah, even though I believe that we ought to do, I think we had one of these in the negative brief on the family planning case. There was a card that said that spacing of births was better for mothers, so they need family planning programs. And there was a card that showed that there was a Mozambique study or something that showed that it didn't make any difference, that there was no life savings. Well, the person who said that the Mozambique study was flawed actually favored the other position, but she admitted that that particular study was bad. So in the Blue Book, we disclose, we say, even though Dr. Expert believes in such and such, even she admits that the Mozambique study is flawed, or something like that. You can look it up. So we disclose the author's intent in the tagline or in the citation of the evidence, so that people understand that we're not distorting what this person believes. We're disclosing it. Ignoring qualifiers, taking out words like normally or generally or often or frequently or things like that. Possibly, might be. People drop those words out when they cite things. Watch this one down here in the bottom. Imagine, okay, let's read the card as it is. Taken as a whole, I think this may go to something, the example you were talking about earlier, Chris and Isaac. Okay, Dr. Expert in 2012 says, it's possible that climate change could at some time in the future be substantial enough to pose a threat to one or two species of life on Earth. The linkage is not proven, and many other events would also have to happen to turn it into a disaster situation. Okay, does Expert think that climate change is a big problem? No. One or two, maybe in the future, if other things change, maybe. That's what Expert thinks. All right, but what if we underline selectively and then start reading it? Climate change could pose a threat to life on Earth and turn it into a disaster situation. Totally changed the meaning. I didn't take any words out. The card is all still there, but I did take words out by just selectively underlining. I totally distorted what Dr. Expert believes. People do this all the time, and it's not ethical. Again, read the cards other people are citing and go look for the parts that they're not underlining and see what else this guy had to say. And you can catch stuff like, I've seen this kind of stuff in source books many times. Okay, how about dates? I've seen a lot of frauds on evidence dates as well. For example, hypothetically, today is the 2nd of October. So imagine I go down to your friendly local public library, let's say in Tulsa, and I check out a book. And the book was written by Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State, in 1968. And it says the U.S. should withdraw ground forces from Vietnam. Okay, wow, I got a great idea for a debate plan. let's do a 1AC about withdrawing all American ground forces from Vietnam. And I'm going to cite Dr. Henry Kissinger, October 2nd, because that's the date I checked the book out of the library. That's the date I read it, the date I checked it out. And we're going to withdraw, and Kissinger says it would solve for world peace, restore American credibility, and save lots of lives. Is that a winning case? No, that's stupid. It's unethical. But you know what? Debaters do that all the time. They go onto a website, write down the date they looked it up on the web, and say, oh, look, October 2nd, 2012, Dr. Expert says blah de blah de blah. That's just as unethical as the date I checked out of the library. It doesn't matter what date you read it. What matters is, when did you write it? When was it published? If it's a copyright date, we've started disclosing copyright dates in Blue Book. We always put, if all we have is a copyright date, that's what we put in the evidence. We say this was copyrighted on this date, if that's all we know about the evidence. Now, what about articles that don't have dates? That's what ND means, no date. There's a couple of ways to look up what the date is for an article that has no date attached to it. One way is to go look internally and see what it references inside internally. If you look inside that article, you'll find that the last event that it references happened in the spring of 1996. Now, it's very unusual for a historian or an expert to write a policy paper in 2007, and the last thing he says, talks about, happened in 96. He's talking about recommending current policies. That's just not how experts write. You don't want to have that happen to you. So be careful with your dates. You can look, one way to cite a card that doesn't have a date is to look at, another way is to look in the footnotes. Sometimes the author will cite footnotes for things that he's citing. And you'll see that he cites Joe Expert, 2007, Jane Smith, 2009, Frank Johnson, 2008, boom, boom, boom. Okay. If you look at what the most recent footnote that he cited was, you can say, well, the article must have been written no earlier than 2009. Because if he cites footnotes from 2009 and back, he must have been writing at least in 2009, because you can't cite things that don't exist yet. So I know the article was written no earlier than 2009. So you could cite that. You could say this was written by Dr. Expert in an article published no earlier than 2009. And you're disclosing that you don't know the exact date, but you know it's no older than 2009. Again, full disclosure. Be ethical. Explain to the judge this is where we got this date from. Another example would be the article has no date, but it says last week when President Obama was inaugurated as president for the first time, or was inaugurated as president, blah de blah de blah. Okay, well I know when that was written. You know, it must have been written in January 2009. Okay, because it's talking about an event that happened that week. Okay, you get the idea. Okay, how to protect yourself? Check the cards and briefs you trade for. Again, you could be in trouble. You could be personally in trouble for cards that somebody else fabricated. They show up in your briefs. So double check what you get from other people. Don't accept evidence at the last minute before a big round. Again, you don't know what somebody's giving you. You don't have time to check it out. Cut cards with more context than needed, but underline. Use underlines to show the whole context. And again, this helps assure people that you're using it properly within context. And then listen for things that sound too good to be true. Okay, what if we suspect that somebody else is using unethical evidence? What do we do? First thing I suggest you do is always assume the best. Don't assume that just because someone has a good card, it must be unethical. Okay, again, I don't want you to start accusing everybody every debate round of being unethical. I just want you to be aware that there's more that's out there than probably that people have thought. That it is a serious problem. It doesn't mean everybody's cheating all the time. It just means you need to be aware of it. And you need to make sure you're not doing it. And if you suspect it, then be aware that it could be out there. And even people you like and think are good debaters may be doing it. Always deal with the evidence, not the person. When we get up and we see a card that has some suspicious strikeouts in it, or they've struck out the word not, you say, Judge, this evidence has a problem with it because they've taken the word not out of the card. And you're welcome to look at it after the round, but what it says is, and read the part and then say, and Judge, the word not's been struck out. Now, this card was used in the 1A to talk about so-and-so, but actually what it really proves is this. And then we don't get into, that proves that they're really bad people and blah, blah, blah. We don't talk about the people, talk about the evidence. Let the judge decide what to do about the people. And you talk about the evidence and what the problem is with the evidence. Give them an opportunity to clarify. If you discover it, ask about it in cross-ex. Okay, doesn't that card have the word not in it? Oh, yeah, it does. Okay, so what does that mean then? Oh, well, I guess you're right. I guess it doesn't mean. Or if they just insist, oh, no, the word not isn't in that card. You sure? Yeah, yeah, that card. No, that card really says what we said it did. Okay, thanks. And then you go back and say, well, Judge, let me explain this to you. Now, I asked him about this in cross-ex, but here's the facts, Judge. Here's what this card really says. Never just raise ethical issues as a cheap way of winning. Again, we need to have some reasonable suspicion that something's going on. Don't just scream ethics violation every round. And understand that it may happen accidentally. So again, talk about the evidence, not about the personalities. Okay, how do we raise this in a round? A bad way would be to say, Judge, the affirmative team took this card out of context, so we win. That's not how you do it. A better way would be, Judge, the card read by the affirmative team fails to include certain information which we believe is relevant to this round. Let me explain to you the rest of the information that was in the article that Dr. Expert that they cited. He goes on to say later in the article, so-and-so and so-and-so. Now, Judge, that wasn't in the part that they read to you, but that shows that Dr. Expert really doesn't support their position in this round. So, and then you go on and explain what the problem is. Okay? How about, here's a bad example. This evidence is riddled with ellipses and is so suspect we know the affirmative falsified it. Well, no. How about this? Before we evaluate this evidence, we would appreciate if the affirmative team could provide us with a complete copy of the article. Only then can we ascertain the true intent of this card. Now, these are examples of the first time you encounter a card. Hopefully what you would do during your prep time is you would make a note of the URLs and you would go get these cards and so that you would be prepared the next time you or anybody in your club encounters a team. A lot of times you won't catch frauds the first time you hit them. But if something sounds suspicious, take notes, research it, and brief it out so that the next time you hit that team, you've got the entire article with you. And then you can say, okay, here's what they said, but Judge, here's the rest of the article. Here's what the article says. Okay, is it a voting issue? For the judge, yes. For the debater, no. What do I mean by that? If you point out ethical problems in a debate card, then it's up to the judge to decide what to do with it. But you don't say, Judge, they misused this quote, therefore we win and sit down. You keep debating. You raise that as one of the issues in the round, and then you go on and say, okay, now my next argument is topicality. My next argument is solvency. Boom, boom, boom. And you just keep going. Finish the debate. Because the judge might not agree with you. So you can't just assume that you've won the round on that issue. Use it as a refutation point. Okay, a judge on their first solvency card, they read you that solvency evidence from Dr. Smith, but they took out the word not from that card. So that card doesn't apply to this round. It doesn't prove their point. So they lose on that solvency argument. Okay, notice I haven't called them liars and cheats and frauds and bad people. I just use it as a refutation point. And I'll let the judge decide how he wants to punish them, if at all. What should judges do? Well, a lot of things. I'm not going to go over that because you all aren't debate judges. Moral principles. Go talk to them after the round. Maybe you can persuade them. Or maybe if they look at it, maybe they didn't realize it was unethical. Maybe you say, hey, you know, what about this card where you struck out the word not? And maybe they'll say, oh yeah, you know, I didn't notice that. Or yeah, you're right. That's a bad thing to do. I'll stop doing it. And maybe that will solve the problem permanently. And so even if they lose that round, maybe in the future that won't happen again. And they'll reform their behavior. Wonderful. Then you've made the world a better place. And that's a wonderful thing to happen. Okay, how to detect unethical evidence. Here's an example. Endangered Species Act creates billions of dollars and saves species. Professor John Doe, 2009. Some would say that the ESA protects wildlife, creates billions of dollars of economic activity every year. Certain experts even maintain that the ESA saved the bald eagle. I throw some candy. Isaac. Some would say, all right, that's the yellow flag. What else? There's another yellow flag in this article. Yes? Okay, yeah, that goes along with some would say, but there's another issue in the card. This is something you would see if you asked for the card and looked it over during prep times. Yeah, what's the title of the article? So the tagline says ESA is good, right? But what's the title of the article?
Time to reconsider.
Oh, so the professor says it has alleged success. Sounds like he's against it, right? But the tagline says, oh, it's a wonderful success. So there's a conflict between the tagline and the title of the article. So it sounds like maybe they're taking this one out of context. All right, how about this one? Ooh, they forgot to say that, didn't they? All right.
It's not all safe.
Yeah. Okay. So we're leaving out important qualifiers and modifiers. Okay, that's good. Let's move on. Okay, this is from a source book in 2008. I copied this exactly from the source book, and then my commentary is down here in small print at the bottom. This is how it appeared in the source book. Inherency 2, USAID is not addressing Indian child labor. USAID website, June 10, 2008. I've already told you this is fraud. Instead of asking you to identify with the fraud, you tell me how I identified this. As soon as I read this card, I said, something's wrong with this. How did I identify it, Ryan? Yep. There's a mistake in the number. Okay? They said five factors, and then you count them out, and there's about six factors. Okay? So that was one thing that tipped me off. Yes. Yeah. That's another thing that made me question. Okay? USAID website. Okay? That website exists, and that was the date, and that is a correct, was at the time I looked it up, a correct URL. So the URL is accurate, and so on. So it's okay to cite USAID on their official website. That's not a problem. What about the opening line? What's wrong with the opening line of the text that gave away that it was fabricated? Thank you. To me, that was like a big red flag. Like, you don't talk about yourself in the third person. Nobody writes like that. So I went and looked up the website. What they had done was they looked at the website and they didn't find any heading that said child labor. So they wrote this description of what they thought the website meant and then cited it as a piece of evidence. Now, it turns out if you actually go click under some of the things underneath those categories, there was stuff about child labor. So it was not only fabricated, it was also wrong. So massive fraud. But that was in a source book 4 years ago. Here's another one. This is from a source book too, from about 4 years ago on India. What's wrong with this one? What tips you off that there's a problem? Yeah, it's a poorly written tagline. It should say a secondary. Okay, Chris?
Well, the Green Revolution is capitalized.
Now, therefore, what do you conclude? What's your conclusion from that?
That they made up the second half.
Thank you! The second half is completely fabricated. The second part is completely fabricated. It's added on as analysis. They didn't copy it from another article. They just made it up. Now, I'll tell you what tipped me off. You're sharp, because I've never noticed the capitalization before in all the years I've been using this slide. So that's really sharp. What tipped me off was the second sentence is incredible. I don't believe it. I found it like it's one of those too good to be true kind of things. This sentence right here. Nothing has been done to address the issue of poverty in India. When I hear that at my age, having heard countless debate cases and read bazillions of articles, and somebody reads me a piece of evidence that says nothing has been done about poverty in India, I think, what? There's bazillions of programs about poverty in India. There's billions of dollars in foreign aid. There's all these stuff going on, and you're telling me that nothing's been done? I don't believe that. That just can't physically be possible. All right, let's keep going. All right, tampering with the quote. What they did was this is the way they cited it in the source book. Here's the actual sentence. They took words, moved them around, moved the sentences, changed words, and so on, and altered the meaning of the quote. I'm not going to go into this one, so just, there it is. I'm proving that this stuff happens all the time. Okay, how to spot it. Number one, wording that sounds like what a debater would say. All right? That's how I spotted that previous one. Nothing has been done about poverty in India. I don't believe that. That's what a debater would say. If you hear something or something doesn't sound quite right or it's too good to be true, and that's kind of what this is about. Because you spend all your life checking every single card. You shouldn't have to do that. What I would say is if you hear something that sounds too good to be true or meets one of these tests, then go check that out. All right, here's an example. I made this one up. But you saw the Burns card before where it's the same kind of thing. Somebody throws in a sentence at the end that's just too good to be true. So go look up stuff like that. All right, here's another. Okay, we talked about this one already. Strange mistakes in grammar and spelling. Okay, five factors, but there's really six. Or six factors, and there's really five. Or they're talking about themselves in the third person. Okay, that's what tipped us off to the USAID card. Formatting by itself doesn't mean fraud. Formatting can just be the website has a weird format. But it can be an indicator that somebody tampered with something. So go look it up and see. If not, fine. No problem. But it could indicate that something was changed or added onto the end. Timing gaps. Here's one I saw in a round. Again, I made up the card, but it's the same principle. And it was the same issue, the Castro human rights issue. Somebody got up and read a card. that sounded like this, said from Dr. McHugh in 2009. In 1991, Castro jailed 25 political dissidents and tortured 13 others. Then in 1993, he executed 3 journalists who reported on the 91 torture. This pattern of human rights abuses makes him the worst dictator in the Western Hemisphere. Okay, maybe all that's true, but what's the problem? Dr. McHugh, in 2009, if he wants to prove that Castro is the worst dictator, he's not just going to stop by talking about what Castro did back in 93. What about the intervening 16 years? Maybe he's repented and cleaned up his act, and he's now a beacon of democracy for the world. Okay? He's not going to just ignore 16 years of history between his last example and today's date. Scholars don't do that. And sure enough, when I asked the student after the round, I said, okay, where'd you get that card? Oh, well, it didn't have any date on it. I didn't believe that. So I went and looked up the URL. The date is right at the top of the article. She just misrepresented it. She had cited it as the date she looked it up online instead of a 1993 card that it really was. So that happens. Here's another variation on the timing gap. Gold standard. Oh, I saw a card, a gold standard card one time. Gold standard creates economic stability. From OPEC Tate in 2009. Adopting a gold standard would stabilize the U.S. dollar and create economic stability within 2 to 5 years of its adoption. All right, the reason that I spotted this one as being a problem was because I remember being an old guy back in the 80s and 70s, people talking about the gold standard, how we ought to do this. Now it's coming back again. People are talking about it now, but this was 3 or 4 years ago. And being an old guy, I thought, that sounds like something somebody in 1980 would say. Sure enough, I went and looked it up. The article's from 1980. This guy was citing it in 2009 as the date that he read it. I'm done with ethics. Well, I'm not done with ethics, but I'm done with the lecture on ethics. Hope we keep having ethics. Let's take a break. We'll come back in 5 minutes, please.